far. Listen to Say Hey, Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio show. My name is Jake, joined as always by Noobs. And we are back from Christmas, Noobs. It's almost 2016.
I hope all our English listeners enjoyed their Boxing Day.
Yeah, Boxing Day. I don't actually know what Boxing Day is, but I know that it's something over there.
I think it's when you put the presents back in the boxes to return them.
What a great day that is. I'm glad they have a national holiday for it. I hope we didn't offend anybody. I really don't know what
Boxing
Day is.
No, I don't know what it is. It's the day after Christmas, though.
Yeah,
I know that.
Right,
and
right.
So I'm sure it's related. Maybe that's the day they actually give the presents and they actually, like, or it's like the 25th is maybe more religious. I don't really even know.
This is a bizarre thing to speculate about. I think we should just clam up before we ruffle somebody's feathers.
I agree. That's what I should do most of the time.
I'm going to shut myself up.
Yeah.
In fact, let's talk about things we do know about, one of which is...
or at least pretend to know about.
We pretend to know about. The biggest college football games of the year are coming up later this week.
Yes.
And it's always a long layoff.
Wait, so the GoDaddy.com?
The GoDaddy,
yeah. Auto Car Bowl, that wasn't the most important game?
Apparently not.
Okay.
In fact, I have I was listening to Ted Robinson earlier today, the 49ers broadcaster, and he also does a lot of college ball and national stuff, and he had an interesting thought. We'll get to that in a bit. Let's talk about those two matchups, because we've kind of talked about the teams involved quite a bit over the year, but not specifically maybe head-to-head.
Mm-hmm.
So Clemson, Oklahoma. Oklahoma is actually favored.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you see in that one?
Well, I think Oklahoma's probably playing the best football towards the end of the regular season, arguably, of any of those teams. It's kind of hard to argue against Clemson, considering that they haven't dropped a single game all year, 13-0, including the conference championship. So, you know, Oklahoma is playing really well. As far as them being, I think, a 3.5-point favorite, I'm a little surprised at that. Baker Mayfield... great quarterback. They've got a good running game and obviously a really strong defense right now. But, you know, to be honest with you, they kind of got lucky when they played everybody as far as the big matchups against TCU and Baylor and Oklahoma State. They really trounced Oklahoma State and took care of the Cowboys that game. But they played TCU when Boykin was hurt. Boykin was the Horned Frogs quarterback who was, you know, up until about, you know, the 10th week of the season was considered a Heisman front runner.
Mm-hmm.
He got injured. Oklahoma didn't have to face him. They also didn't have to face Baylor with their starting quarterback either.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know it's not all about the quarterback. I mean, it's not the NFL, but I mean, not the NFL is, but you know what I mean? But
yeah.
Still, it's like when you, they kind of, you know, everything kind of, the chips kind of felt good for them. You know, the dominoes or whatever, however you want to say. They did have kind of a bad loss to Texas earlier in the year. This is not a very strong Longhorns team this year.
No.
Nor have they really been since Mack Brown left.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a year or two before that. But, you know, sometimes you kind of throw that stuff away. It's a rivalry game.
Right.
You know, and it happens. But, yeah, so Oklahoma hasn't dropped a game since, I don't know, you know, mid-October. But, you know, with this, like, three-and-a-half-week layoff we're going to have between conference championship games and, you know, the New Year's Eve Final Four, you know, I don't know. I just don't know if momentum even plays anything into it.
Yeah, I don't know if you can really calculate momentum when you're not playing for almost a month.
Right.
You know? That's a long time.
It's a long time. And, I mean, Oklahoma didn't play... They actually didn't play conference championship weekend, so they really actually haven't played a ball game since November.
Right. I don't like it, and we say that every year, but we'll get back to it. What about the Alabama game?
I'm expecting an extremely low scoring game.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, if this one's 16-13, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I was going to almost put a top on Michigan State's points at like 14. Something
right.
like that.
Yeah. I think they could get 16, a touchdown, and 3 field goals, but it's going to be hard to get into the end zone, I think, for both teams. I think you're going to see the kicking game really come into play. It's being played in Dallas, Texas, so it is going to be indoors in Jerry Jones world down there at AT&T, I believe. I think they have the roof open, but the thing is so gargantuan that it's like, the weather still doesn't affect it. Like, there's a hole, but it's not...
Right, right.
You know what I mean, there's still no wind.
Unless it goes El Paso on them and starts snowing.
Right.
Which was totally weird.
It has been really, really strange weather in the Southwest
yeah.
This past week. And conversely, it was like 70 degrees in Boston.
Right. After last year, you know, everybody being snowbound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
crazy.
Crazy weather. We don't have to get too far into that. But, yeah, I think both games are going to be highly entertaining. I don't really see any blowouts like last year, Oregon blowing out Florida State. That was a real shock.
Yeah, that was kind of shocking, but you know, fun. That was a fun.
It was fun. It was fun to see that happen. Just because I think a lot of people, if you're not a diehard Seminoles person, you probably aren't a big fan.
Yeah,
just because of their history, and you know, Jameis Winston was definitely rubbing people the wrong way last year.
Most definitely. Now I've seen plenty of bowl games over the last week or so.
Too many.
Of course,
5-17.
There's like 50 bowl games, literally. Yeah. I think right now. Central Michigan 7-5 is playing 5-7 Minnesota as we speak.
Oh man!
If that doesn't tickle your nose with a feather,
what are we doing here? Let's get down to the bar.
Let's get right back down to ESPN2.
I was gonna say three.
It's just like,
available online.
You know, Ted Robinson was talking earlier about how college basketball has this wonderful playoff format that's just like 3 weeks of just kind of sports glory, and that they struggle more with regular season, and how do we keep the regular season relevant when you have so many teams getting into this thing that everybody likes in the postseason? You know, how do you keep fan bases involved in national television audiences? And it's the complete opposite with college football, where aside from the three or four relevant bowl games, which at this point are, you know, the Rose Bowl, you
and
know,
the two semifinals,
and I don't even know after that. Aside from those, the postseason is completely uninteresting. You have all these neutral locations for teams that may or may not be even above 500. Empty stadiums, games that no one cares about, basically non-conference games away from home.
Yeah.
And you rely entirely on the regular season because that's where all the interest is.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is kind of flip-flopped and strange. And he made the point that the bowls have done this to themselves. College football has cannibalized itself by once having an interesting, you know, handful of bowls that people looked forward to, and just putting it on so much steroids that it's eaten itself alive.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. And it, to your point, I think, and obviously you're kind of, you know, I don't know, paraphrasing maybe what he was saying, but I think we both probably have felt that way for a while, you and I, the fact that there is
lots of people.
There's literally like 40 bowl games, I think.
Yeah.
It's in the upper 30s.
You don't even have to be 500 to go to a bowl game.
Well, you were supposed to. That's what's so funny is you had to be six wins to be eligible, but now because they didn't fill the eligibility, the spots, because of the fact that there are so many bowls this year that just not enough teams actually even got to 6-6. Mm-hmm. So you've had a few 5-7 teams where I guess supposedly they did it more on academic standards. Well, like, whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Nobody's watching this stuff. Nobody's going to the game.
No one's going to the game.
I mean, one of these things was played in Boise, Idaho. And I'm just like, who wants to go? Like, what kid wants to go to Boise, Idaho?
From across the country.
In December. I mean, it's not like going before where it's like, okay, these kids who have been living in Nebraska all fall and they get to go to Miami for a bowl game and play another highly ranked team. Now it's not like that. We need to get it back down to like, you know, like you said, like 10 really important games with really good teams.
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, obviously it's a money thing,
but how are they making money off of it?
It's so embarrassing. Like they had the annual Kraft cheese game or whatever they call it now. It used to be the Fight Hunger game. They played at Levi's now instead of in San Francisco. It was Nebraska and UCLA, 5-7 Nebraska. There's no one there.
Right.
Those are two, well, especially with Nebraska, one of the more diehard fan bases in all of college football.
Totally.
The stadium was empty.
Yeah.
You're talking about a smattering of people in the first deck.
Yeah.
I just don't see what's interesting about that for any type of fan. It's a meaningless non-conference game, essentially, for two teams that are average to decent at best.
Yeah, and if the fan base isn't going to travel, because that's what a lot of this was about, too, was the fact that it would bring a lot of money to the local economy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like having, you know, 50, 60,000 people who weren't normally going to be spending money in your town that weekend.
Right.
And now they're going to be there. But if the university isn't being supported by their fans, you know, traveling to 2,000 miles, and who would want to travel 2,000 miles to see your team that was 5-7 that was disappointing when you can just sit at home and watch them on television? This is one of those things where I hate to say it, but this is the nefarious hand of Las Vegas
You think so?
Absolutely. I think that they pressure the NCAA for more, because, I mean, it comes down to Gant. Like, you follow the money on anything. If nobody's going to the games, then people are either, A, watching them on TV, because there's got to be some kind of advertising revenue. Well, it's like, why are people watching 5-7 bowl games on TV? It's because they're gambling on them.
A lot of people are. Yeah. But it's like, why not make it a home game for somebody? You know, like, if you're going to have all these crappy bowl games, have UCLA host that Nebraska game. At least you up the chance of a decent turnout.
Right.
Because there's no chance in any of these games that anyone's going to be there.
No.
You can't afford to get there. And why would you want to go there in the first place? Right. It's not like everybody's going to Hawaii, like you said. And it's funny. I was thinking of Hawaii. What was the annual game in Hawaii? Not the Sun Bowl. The Aloha Bowl.
Yeah.
Remember when a low-level bowl game like the Aloha Bowl was actually kind of decent? It wasn't that long ago, like 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, if you made the Aloha Bowl, it was like, well, it's not anything. It's not, you know, the Sugar Bowl, but still, it's the Aloha Bowl.
Yeah, you're playing an 8-3 team against, like, a 7-5 team or
all
whatever.
All of those are gone. Like they're still there, but they don't matter.
They don't mean anything.
They become less interesting with the addition of all the other ones.
Right.
You know, it's like, I don't care about the Sun Bowl anymore.
No.
Or the Peach New Mexico Bowl. Or whatever, the Independence Bowl.
Yeah.
The Liberty Bowl. It goes on and on and on. It's kind of unfortunate.
And the corporate sponsorship, too, makes it to where you don't even remember what the actual bowl is. It's always like the Meineke.com Car Care Bowl.
Right.
Bowl to remind you, you know, to make sure you keep your vehicle up.
Yeah. Or the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, which they've been that now for like 15, 20 years.
But it used to be...
They like own that label. I can't even think of the Peach Bowl as anything but the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's a shame because it used to be Orange, Cotton, Sugar. And it was, you know, it's like those were produced obviously by the sugar industry and the cotton industry and the orange, you know, the citrus growers and stuff like that. But now it's like one specific corporation, the USF&G Sugar Bowl. And so it's like it kind of loses its pageantry.
Right.
Not kind of. There's no doubt about it. And now they're trying to name the semifinals. They're attributing, you know, there's like some rotating basis between the Fiesta, the Rose, the Sugar, and the Cotton, you know, and the orange.
At that point, it doesn't matter.
It's just called the semifinals.
Then it's just a playoff.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things about that point that Robinson made about the regular season being where the interest lies is so true, because like that really lousy Central Michigan, Minnesota game that's on right now, if that were a regular season game, I would watch it if it was on television and I was just sitting at home, because there would be implication that the team was playing for something.
Right.
But there's no anything. Like, there's no big deal in winning that game right now for anybody.
No, it means nothing.
It means nothing to anyone. So, like, I don't want to watch. It's almost like watching an exhibition. Like you're watching, like, you know, some sort of like flag football championship. It's just like, it's totally uninteresting.
Or if, like, you know, you're gonna have like the Lions and the Browns play a playoff game that wasn't actually a playoff game.
Here's a week 17 Lions Browns matchup. Here you go.
But it's not even week 17. It would be like week 19 or 18.
Yeah,
like having an extra week of games against these crappy teams.
Yeah, we'll have all the
no
teams
reason.
That didn't make the playoffs just play each other.
Yeah, like a random pull from a hat.
Yeah, enjoy.
That's basically what
the bowl system is.
Yeah.
God, it really is. It's too bad.
It is too bad.
They keep, you know, I watch ESPN Classic, and you watch the, you know, they'll run whatever from 1988 or 1992, and it just seems so much more vastly interesting.
Totally.
You know? And that's not like golden age thinking. That's just the way it's just lame now. It's totally lame. Though I am looking forward to the playoff. That's
cool.
For
sure.
That's cool. But other than that, I don't care. I watched the Rose Bowl. That's the only other one left where I'm like, oh yeah, I want to watch the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, well, that's going to be a great game.
Yeah,
Stanford, Iowa.
That's going to be a really good game.
Yeah. And I think there's one more. Like, I think the Fiesta Bowl is going to be good.
Okay.
And I can't remember off the top of my head. It's like basically like
is it Baylor?
It's like Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
I think Oklahoma State's in it because they're like a one or two loss team.
Mm-hmm.
Two losses, I think.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, there's still like the Fiesta and the Rose are going to be good. But basically, that's it after that. You know what I mean? Like, I can't even remember who's in the Peach Bowl, Ole Miss. I mean, there's some decent matchups. But, you know, like you just said, it's all watered down. So you don't even really know where to look.
No.
Other than, okay, well, I know the semifinals. That means something. So there
right,
you go.
Right. We'll move on from college football here on Say Hey. We'll talk some hoops for a minute. The Warriors and Cavs got together on Christmas Day and played a as hyped a regular season matchup as you'll find at any point. I mean, that game had been literally being hyped since the outset, if not before, if not during the, you know, this was
right.
a big game. And I was kind of eager for it to be over because no matter who wins, it's just one game in the regular season.
Yeah.
You know, like the hype around these things is over the top.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it would be all too appropriate somehow for the Warriors to lose so I could listen to more talking heads about this, that, and the other thing. It was going to drive me crazy, but I thought this is just the way it's going to be. But they wound up winning 89-81. They gutted it out, still without Barnes. Curry missed most of the second quarter with some calf tightness. And it was a good win for them. It was another version of them saying, like, you know, if you want to grind one out, we'll do that too.
Yeah.
So it was good to see. They're going to get a little healthier when Barnes gets back later this week. Barbosa's out right now too, so play the Kings tonight and don't let it be a trap game when you're a little bit undermanned.
Totally.
Yeah, because the Kings are not good, but they do have talent, so you never know when they might turn it on and turn it off.
And they've kind of been playing a little better of late, didn't they? They
a little
won
better.
Like four
they're,
out of five
I think
or something.
They're 12-18.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're still kind of an internal mess. George Karl walked out on his press conference the other day.
Oh, really?
Just because he said he was frustrated, whatever. They're the Kings. But, I think more interesting than even the Christmas Day game itself was Mark Jackson making the headlines again for being critical and wrapping it in a compliment of Steph Curry because he says, in a way, he's already hurt the game when talking about the fact that he's a three-point shooter.
God.
You get kids in the gym and all they want to do is go to the three-point line and you got to realize you're not Steph Curry and blah, blah, blah. It's like, what a stupid ignorant, spiteful thing to say,
yeah, I was gonna say
from a guy that's clearly still bitter.
Taste of bitterness.
It's like, oh, so I guess you would have been on that fence on that side of the fence that said Kareem Abdul shouldn't be allowed to dunk. Maybe
maybe
you would have been into that
right.
in college.
Right.
You know, like, what a stupid thing to say. I don't care how old you are. If you are interested in basketball and you're a youth and you have a player you like watching, the first thing you want to do when you're messing around with your friends or whatever is pretend to be that player in
right.
any sport,
right.
whether you're good or not. That's what you do. You imitate players that are the best at what they do. You know, like, how many times do you think kids in the 90s like tried to change hands on layups or like dipsy do under the hoop like Jordan? I mean, that's what you do.
Saying he's bad for the game is like saying penicillin is bad.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous.
I mean, it's like, really?
Yeah.
First of all, it's not Steph Curry. Steph Curry didn't create the three-point line.
No.
Okay? They brought that into play in like the very early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I think they took it from the ABA, actually,
mm-hmm.
The NBA, as far as that goes. So, yeah, no, some people out there might not realize that the three-point line is actually, compared to basketball, it's actually relatively new, I'd say, in the last, you know, I was born before the three-point shot,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, in the NBA, at least. I'm not sure about the ABA. I'll have to go back and check my numbers, but late 70s, regardless, it has changed the game. Because before, the highest percentage shot that you could make was a layup or a dunk, right? You could get as close to the basket as possible. And big men, they were the ones you wanted. You wanted the guys that shot, you know, protected the paint, block shots, and the guys that could also score the easiest. Now the three-point game has changed. Three-point line has changed the game. But you can't blame guys that have now made that into a deadly weapon, guys that are unguardable, even if you extend the defense. Like, you just got to figure out how to, like, get with the times.
Yeah.
But being a Greg Popovich or being some of these other guys who come out and say, oh, it's destroyed the game and blah, blah, blah. Well, no, the game changed. Okay? But it's the line's difference. It's the rulemaker's difference. It's not Steph Curry. It's not Klay Thompson. They didn't ruin the game.
And most people don't think that. Like, it's really this, it's like an old guard faction, you know?
Right.
That, like, you know, the Charles Barkleys of the world, where it's like, hey, you know what? I like bully ball too, and I like it when guys throw the ball down low and just grind into the hoop. But you know what? At times, that's not all that interesting to watch. So if you're getting angry that too many guys are up-tempo and shoot right. three-pointers and it's sloppy, well, how about a less interesting version of basketball? That's a totally fair criticism. Now, it's not like I actually think that you shouldn't criticize anything. The game is played the way it's played by the players.
Yeah.
And this is the trend now, and I don't have a problem with it. There's nothing wrong with what they're doing.
See, I would make an argument, though, that back then it wasn't all bully ball. I mean, they were setting a lot of picks, mm-hmm. a lot of screen and rolls, a lot of guys running along the baseline, and big men really could pass the ball well. Wilt Chamberlain, when he was dominating, he was leading his team in assists, too.
Oh, no, no.
You know what I mean? So it's not just the biggest guy wins because he's like Shaq and he can just throw more elbows than the next guy. I mean, basketball has always been, to me at least, a beautiful game in which those who could dribble and pass really well and see the floor will be good players. But
it seems like when a person like Mark Jackson or Charles Barkley, whoever is critical of the three-point game, mm-hmm. seems like that's what they're trying to fall back on, when it's like, it wasn't exactly like that anyway.
Right.
Like, yeah, that was a bigger part of the game 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's not like that's the only thing people did.
No.
And it's not like it's the only thing people do now.
No.
There's more of it, but there's still centers. People still get rebounds.
Right.
There's still dunks. There's all of these things. It's just now it's more of a shooter's game.
Now it's like if you can get a 7-footer who can step out and hit that shot, mm-hmm. like a Porzingis or Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah, Nowitzki's kind of the template for big men
right.
doing that.
And so it's like, hey, it's not going to kill. It's not like we're going to have an NBA in 5 years where everybody's 6'4" and under.
No.
Sorry, that ain't happening.
Never.
So, I don't understand what this uproar is. I can only imagine that it's just bitterness and jealousy.
Yeah.
And the thing is that Popovich won, especially the last one when they beat the Heat. I mean, every single one of his guys was hitting threes.
Oh, yeah. And Popovich's teams are the model for the way the game has shifted in terms of
absolutely.
Using the free throw line
right.
and embellishing foul calls and all of that. I mean, that's like, you talk about a team that's
Pop
completely
that.
Different than 20 years ago.
Yeah, totally.
They're the poster children for that. So really, I don't think there's a lot of people that think that way, but the few tend to get their voices heard. And when it's an idiot like Mark Jackson, I'm just going to say the guy's an idiot, because I have problems with his religious views and things as well.
Well, especially that he's such a proselytizer.
Yeah.
It's one thing, I don't care what anybody believes,
no,
but if you're going to stand,
thump people.
I'm not a big thumping fan.
No, and you say negative things in the process
right.
because of what you believe in. It's like,
I'm not surprised he hasn't gotten a job.
A biased moron like Mark Jackson, it's really hard to listen to.
Now he's not even on TV, I don't think.
No, he's still doing his analyst thing for ESPN. I pray somebody gives him a job so they'll get him out of there.
Okay, because the last game I saw with Van Gundy I can't remember.
Mike Breen?
Yeah, thank you.
Uh-huh.
The last one I saw with Breen and Van Gundy, Jackson wasn't there. So I was thinking he had gotten let go maybe.
No, he's around.
Because it was highly uncomfortable when he was doing Warriors games.
It's so
but like in a good uncomfortable way.
Yeah.
you could just...
It's brutal.
Yeah.
Why can't every analyst be like Chris Webber or something?
Chris Webber's a good analyst.
Chris Webber's really good.
He's
That's
really
just
good.
One example of a good analyst in the NBA.
Totally. He's good. He's also good in the studio.
He's great in the studio.
Yeah,
I like Grant Hill a lot too.
Yeah.
As an analyst, but I don't know why the Mark Jacksons get jobs. Maybe because they say stupid things that make headlines. That's about all I can think.
It's like Donald Trump.
Yeah, kind of like.
Stupider you say, stupider thing you say, the higher the ratings.
Good news in the broadcast world. Fox canned the Harold Reynolds Tom Verducci combo, and they're bringing in John Smoltz. So it's going to go back to a 2-man booth for the World Series and whatever CS series they're carrying, and it'll be Joe Buck and John Smoltz.
Okay,
which is the way it should have been, because Smoltz was the best of all of those national guys before McCarver retired, and they wanted to try it out with Reynolds and Verducci, and I thought it was very lousy. I don't like either of those guys as commentators. Harold right. Reynolds, he talks down and he makes a lot of boring, lame jokes, and he's just up there having a good time, and it's like, Harold, you got nothing to say.
Right.
And Tom Verducci's a writer. I mean, I don't see having a writer in the booth. Like, I just have an ex-player do your color. I don't want to have a writer up there doing their thing.
I have a feeling that Joe Buck must have been in his boss's ears on this one, because there was times during the playoffs where you could audibly hear how frustrated Joe Buck was. One time they went to this replay review, and Harold Reynolds just kept harping on this one thing that it was actually really insignificant, and you could see from another angle.
Yeah, that was one of the big criticisms of his analysis.
And Buck is like, but you could see from this one, and you could just tell that he was like getting annoyed.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so that's good. I've liked John Smoltz when he was on MLB Network.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was doing games with Bob Costas.
Yeah, and he was also paired up. These three-man booths are too much in any game.
I agree.
And he was paired up with A.J. Pierzynski, whom, as much as I dislike, Pierzynski, you know, has some things to say because he's a blabbermouth, but you got one guy talking way too much, and then you got John Smoltz trying to be professional, and it's too much.
Right.
Two-man booth. Joe Buck, whom criticize all you like because it's all fair, I always say that he's as good as his partner. And that's why he was so bad with Tim McCarver towards the end. And that's why I think he's pretty good with football, because he's with Troy Aikman.
Yeah. Yeah, the football broadcasts are okay.
They're much better. Yeah. And so I think you can look forward to a much more tolerable and interesting World Series broadcast next year with him and Smoltz. So I'm kind of happy about that.
When the Giants take on the Royals?
Right. Yeah, I guess we haven't even had a chance to talk about them signing Cueto.
And Samardzija.
And Samardzija. And of course, the Dodgers have probably, their fans are not pleased as far as the West goes. Although the Yankees traded for Aroldis Chapman today. They sent four prospects over there for Chapman.
Yeah, I don't like the sound of that.
I don't either. Not because Chapman isn't good, but he's being investigated for weird domestic violence stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And B, like, how is Aroldis Chapman going to make this current Yankees team like better to the point where they're like going to succeed in the playoffs?
Well, I mean, that's the thing.
I mean,
like,
he'll
if
close
you
out some games, but
yeah. But if the majority of your games are you're losing in the ninth inning, then
right, it doesn't mean anything. Yeah. And you give up a bunch of prospects.
Yeah,
and you know the Reds wanted, like, you know, they wanted everything for Chapman. So I'm assuming they gave up some top line guys, even though I haven't had a chance yet to check them out. So that's kind of bizarre, but. Yeah, it is an even year. I'm not going to get caught up in it too much, although I am.
You got to feel good, though.
I'm going to enjoy the thought of it happening.
Nasty rotation.
If it doesn't happen, just speculating, if it doesn't happen, I don't get to talk about the even year anymore.
Right.
So at least for this season, if they're playing well, I will enjoy the specter of the even year.
Yeah, you got to.
Yeah.
Because if they don't do it now, then 2018 is meaningless.
No, it's meaningless in terms of the even factor. Yeah. So I'm going to enjoy the specter.
Imagine if they were to win in 16, 18, and then cap off in a whole decade.
That would 2020, be very strange.
6 and 10, 11 years.
Be 11. That would be very odd.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't be odd. It would be even.
It would be even. That's true. It would be very even.
Watch out for those Cubbies, though, man. Woo!
I know. The Cubs are good. They've become a destination without having won anything, which is the kind of thing you can do when you play in a city like Chicago.
Right.
You don't have to win a World Series for 110 years. And when you show flashes of, like, you're coming up, everybody wants to play for you.
Yeah. I mean, Jason Hayward could have taken more money. I think he got a little too much anyway.
Everybody gets too much.
He is a great defender. I think that team's going to be really good. I'm thinking St. Louis, San Francisco, Chicago.
That'd be the two best teams.
Arizona's going to be pretty good.
There's, you know, it's going to be interesting power shift in terms of, especially the Central. I know the Cardinals are still going to be good, but
this is going to be
they haven't done much this offseason.
No.
And the Cubs did a lot, and were already good. So that's, you could see a legitimate power shift in the NL Central.
For sure.
And the Pirates, I don't know. They've been kind of unlucky in love so far.
They have been.
They have. I don't know. Maybe they'll have another decent year.
I'm thinking it's still 1-2-3, mm-hmm. but the order is going to be changed.
Right.
Like, I think the Cubs will win the division, and then St. Louis and Pittsburgh will be vying for second.
Right, right. Well, we got a lot of time to think that over. So, noobs, it'll be the new year next week.
Yes. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year, and have a good holiday. Maybe we'll see you out at the New Year's show at Women's Club, KZFR.
Dolph Lundgren going to be there?
Dolph Lundgren, I checked with him today. I exchanged some text messages.
No.
He can't make it.
Oh.
I'm bummed.
He's hoping to meet Ivan Drago.
He's not flying in from Russia or the Netherlands or Norway or wherever
Belgium.
He's from.
Yeah.
Wherever they breed people like Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
All right. Stick around. Grant's got me the Peace Talks Radio coming up next. It's KZFR.